Yom Kippur issues. Primarily, we'll discuss the halachas of Mu'uberes, and then we'll see what we have time for afterward. Right, Mu'uberes has become one of the very difficult issues that have to be addressed before Yom Kippur. And the reason for that is that all other questions which come up are questions that we have had for centuries. We've always had the question of a chola. Cholim have always been evaluated by people in the medical profession, and to figure out what the din is. Every so often there is a case of nishtanu ateva. All right, so every so often we will probably update our understanding based on what medical science has to say for us. Sometimes lakula, sometimes lakula on fasting, sometimes lakula on pikuach nefesh. All right, so, and the Mishnah Berurah writes in Simen Tov Reish Yud Ches that these halachas of fasting and kippur are part of the small group of halachos that a rav has to have shogar b'fiv. Right, the many halachos, most shalos which come up, a rav is able to say, "I'll look it up. I'll get back to you." Almost all shalos like that. The very few shalos early in the list of the shalos you have to know mamish on the spot. Right, tos b'shas kriya sefer Torah. You gotta know that on the spot. Right, there is a small sefer out that is titled the Nimsa Tos b'sefer Torah. And you're going to keep it on the shtender, and has pictures, and so there is a quick reference to that also, right? But there are very few. Most other questions that you have to know on the spot, you have a luach. You have to know which haftarah to say last week. Say more psukim, fewer psukim. So you go to the luach to figure these things out. So pikuach nefesh is on Shabbos, a situation where the Mogen Avraham says, of course, the Yerushalmi, that even Hanishal, the Rav gets taken, is held responsible even for being asked the question. Because it means he didn't teach the Baal Avatim, Bikuach Nefesh is Lecha Shabbos. And Yom Kippur, the Mishnah Berurah says, if one of those is somebody faints in Shul, you got to know what to do in Shul. You can't take out the Mishnah Berurah then. So you got to figure out what to do. Somebody's not feeling well. Sometimes, hopefully, many of the questions will come in advance. Like this week, I already hope to put out in the announcements that if a person takes medication once a day, so for almost in all situations, a person can then take the medication with water before Kol Nidre, and again with water after Nila. So if a person takes medication once a day, the only concern could be that if they're on a schedule to take it every single morning, so then over the next, if they speak to the doctor this week already, then the doctor can tell them how to calibrate their how to stagger their days. First they have to make sure that it works. Most medications work, most once a day work, no matter when you take once a day. There are preferences. There are certain medications that work better when one's sleeping, and certain that work better when one's awake. All right, so there are preferences, but most medications that are once a day medications will work no matter when you take them once a day. So if a person, if he speaks, if he starts working this week, he can start staggering this week, next week, from the time Yom Kippur comes around, he can have a night-to-night schedule. And by the time Shabbos comes around, he can be back to his morning-to-morning schedule. So with enough thinking ahead, we can get many of the shilas come up before Yom Kippur. And part of the Rav's job before Yom Kippur is to speak to the people who will need to break their fast and may be hesitant to do so. It used to be in the door before mine that it was very, very rare that a Rav got questions about breaking the fast Yom Kippur. Because it's a local light, it wasn't shaykh. Not even a shaykh. So when I was growing up, the older people, European Jews, they could be on life support, but to eat on Yom Kippur, it's not shayach. It wasn't part of the ask a shayla of Yom Kippur. Not shayach. Even the Rav did the very unusual thing, apparently, I'm not sure if it's accurate, but it seems to me that the unusual thing of going in an IV before Yom Kippur. But the Rav explained it wasn't all he did. It was emotionally. He said it was very clear. Emotionally, he was hard for me to Yom Kippur. But that's now one of the I would say a little bit of a concern. Now, maybe that's in Kasha Shalvin Yom Kippur. The number of Shilas that Rabban Megev, Erev Yom Kippur, Rabbi Orlin will spend countless hours from Shabbos Shuva to Yom Kippur, even before Shabbos Shuva, discussing that didn't happen. He spoke to an older Rav, two Shilas, three Shilas, right? So it's part of being better educated. That since your balabatim will have gone to yeshivas, they'll know pikuach nefesh, dochem, you know, sadik pikuach nefesh, right? So that's the plus side. The downside is that the emotional connection, the thought, the distance, the thought that it's not shayach to Yom Kippur, is that we've lost that to some extent. So on one hand, we've gained better education, and maybe that and that level we're truer to what the halacha requires. On the other hand, it's a little bit concerning that so the red lines that the Kalis will have before are no longer there. So, but the question that the reason that I'm focusing on the question of pregnancy is a little bit different, because pregnancy is very clear in Gemara, Rambam, Shulchan Aruch, that a muberes fasts. It's very clear that on the Tanios of Tzem Gedalia Nesor B'Teves and Shivosa B'Tamuz, that a muberes only fasts mitam minog. It's very clear that the Shulchan Aruch writes you needn't fast, and Ramah writes but noigim to fast. All right, noigim to fast is a lighter mandate, but it's very clear that Gemara, Tanam, Amiram, Rishonim, Shulchan Aruch, then a muberes fast. Now, pregnancy is one of the few things that we can pretty sure lenishtanu atvam, right? Starts the same way, ends almost the same way, lasts for almost the same time. So, lechar we should say pregnancy and muberes is the same thing. However, what the reason why the question is posed often nowadays is because in the medical profession, doctors are much more concerned. Right? Now, the concern of doctors comes from two sources. It comes from a genuine medical concern, the health of the pregnancy and the health of the baby, right? And the concern that's based on studies and good, solid medicine. And another concern of, why should I be sued? Right? Why should I take a chance, a risk that something's going to happen? See, they have to fast. They can do what they want, but I have to do what good medicine says to do. Good medicine says there's no reason in the world why a woman should be fasting. So that often puts the Uberis in a very difficult situation. It often puts the Rav in a difficult situation. So let's go through the Piskei Halacha that have come out. In the Torah world, this issue landed probably it's now 20 years ago, maybe even longer, I'm not sure, when it landed in a very, very surreptitious fashion, that Yaakov Yisrael Fisher was one of the Gedolei Yerushalayim. He was one of the postmen of Yerushalayim, one of the most loved postmen of Yerushalayim. Yaakov Yisrael Fisher was a Gedol B'Teira. He knew everything, and he was the Rav of Zichron. Right? You know what the Zichron is? That's the Shtiblach in Geula. Not the Meshorim Shtiblach, but the Geula Shtiblach. You need to get a minion. Right? So where do you go? You go to the Zichron. Right? So if you're very, very, if you know Yerushalayim very, very well, so then there's Shtiblach in the Shari Chesed, by the Grav. Not as good as Zichron. And you know there's Rashbam in the Kor Baruch. Right? It's not as good as Zichron. And they're the Meshorim Shtiblach. But Zichron, you literally can daven Shachas Mincha Marv almost any time. And the Marv, they give up a little bit after Amr Shachar, maybe. And but you can almost any time. Maybe a few hours in the early afternoon, we can't find a Mincha, maybe. So He was the Rav of Zichron. There's a large shul there as well. He used to have a slot on the Eid HaRed, has poskim available from sunrise to Shkia, from after Vesikin to Shkia. So he had the, I think the 1 to 2 o'clock slot. And by him there were always long lines, because he was also known as Big Makel. So he was very much endeared, and I trained under Shalom Eisen. He was also known to be, he wasn't a machmir, but he would tell me that many women, if they're, many women said they have certain colors to bring to me, others they'll go to the next slot. Because Shalom Eisen had 10 to 12, and I think Fisher had 1 to 2. So he had this Godel B'Yisrael, very much loved, and he writes a Haskoma on Rabbi Baruch Goldberg's Sefer on Aninus. Right? Baruch Goldberg's Sefer is the original of the Art Scroll of Elis. Art Scroll of Elis, it's probably called the Laws of Elis by Art Scroll. So that's a translation of, what's the name of the Sefer? Mekor Baruch. Pnei Baruch, right. Pnei Baruch. So Pnei Baruch had first came out in a very thin Sefer, what to do with Aninus, Halachas of Aninus, all the Halachas of Aninus, and Bigger Cholim, and then that was the precursor of the Sefer of Pnei Baruch and Avelis. So in the Haskama to the Pnei Baruch on Aninus, Rabbi Yaakov Fisher writes that Kayoima Zeh Shenechleshu, you have it in front of you. I quote from the Siliezer, I quote from his detractor. Right? Nishtanu atom. Pregnant women is not like the old pregnant women. They were much stronger. Our pregnant women are nechleshu adoros. We're weaker. V'asaros rabos. Right? And that means scores of women. Ma'pilos edetanis. They have miscarriages as a result of the tainus. Scores of women. So tzrichin kol anosham uboros ad achodesh atshi. So all pregnant women until the ninth month, they have to pochim shir still in Yisidei Raisa and Yom Kippur. So that was a bomb, right? Which went against Shulchan Aruch and everything that had been written until then. He says it's because Nishtanu HaTorah. So that was a bomb. So the Achrei Kechleis HaKol, I don't know of any of the poskim in print who adopted Yisrael Fisher's approach. Siliezer came out strongly against it, as we'll see, and the Bia Omer Ovad Yosef all strongly against it. I don't know if anybody supports it, but let's look at the way that Rabbi Loza Waldenberg addressed the position of Yisrael Fisher. Go ahead. He means Ad Vilay Bechla. We'll talk about it in a moment. We'll get to that.
Says that you're like a
chola
right now?
Just like a chola? No, his sheet is that the uber, that the pregnancy is threatened, a miscarriage, that the baby will die. Right? That's a concern. That the lesman de polig, if a person has a condition where fasting could cause the death of the uber, of course, she breaks her fast. Right? So Rav Waldenberg has a few. Rav Waldenberg was the Rav of Shari Tzedek, right? After Shlomo Zalman, I believe, was a Rav. I'm not sure, officially, unofficially, for a short period of time, something happened. I don't know if he had to step down, and then Rav Waldenberg. Waldenberg was a Talmud of Rav Kook and a Chevroner. At that time, there was a group of Chevroners that Gedol Yisrael, who were in the constellation of Rav Kook. And Rav Waldenberg was probably amongst the poskim. He was the most involved in medical issues. Any medical issue, usually he wrote the most complete shuv on it. Right? That's when it was at a time when Rabbanim were not well versed in medical issues. At that time, medical ethics was the chief rabbi of England. Jacobitz, Lord Jacobitz wrote the first book in medical ethics. It was before Ray Tedler, before Ray Rosner, as they were very young at this time, and they were just coming out. But Jacobitz was the first, was the breakthrough person, and in New York, anybody live in New Rochelle? is Dr. Lewis. His wife is Dr. Friedman. They're married, happily married for many years. But so they were the from doctors who were breaking ground with Lord Jacobowitz in the 50s, doing medical ethics research before my time. But in amongst the poskim, Rav Oldenburg, he was the address of Almeda. He was the Rav of Shaarei Tzedek. He gave shiurim in Shaarei Tzedek. Shaarei Tzedek was a small place at that time, and those shiurim were published in the end of the 8th volume of Tzitzel Yezer. And almost, if not every volume of Tzitzel Yezer has medical shilas. And look at the back in the maftechos; they'll have regular maftechos and then the maftechos of medical issues. And the issue of abortion, Tay-Sachs, that was Rav Oldenburg's, the question about driving home on Shabbos for a doctor. These were all those were Shlomo Zalman and Rav Oldenburg. But all of the, as issues were coming out, that was the cutting edge of halacha, was medical issues from the 50s through probably the 90s. So Rav Oldenburg was the address, and he writes the Shuvin Chelek Yedal and Chelek Yud Zayin already. So it's very late in his career. He has, I think, close to 20 things, 20, 21 volumes, very thin volumes. And there he writes that, look, Rav Fisher wrote this, right? Their colleagues, B'chov and Godel. And then he says, V'hinei l'da'ati zuhi kula gedola ad ma'od. It's a big kula to be matir. Based on Nechleshu Adoros, and to go as far as the Tzrichen. Tzrichen means Emechuyomis. Right? So he says that he raises the following questions. Number one, he says, I don't think Fisher's facts are correct. He says that he writes, Aseros Rabos Shel Noshim, scores of women are Mapilos. He says, well, we know of over the years hundreds of thousands of women who fasted Yom Kippur and they didn't have miscarriages. So why should we be koveya the halacha based on scores of women, which he says, I don't know if it's really correct. I don't know if it's accurate that scores of women have miscarriages because they fast on Yom Kippur. But he says, even if he would be correct, that is a mi'uta de mi'uta. Because that means that, as far as we know, from the time of Shas till modern times, women have been fasting Yom Kippur. Mubars have been fasting, and we don't have records of. In other words, the pregnant women. If this is true, the Tanon would have been aware of it. Amiron would have known about it. Mishonah would have known about it. Shulchan Aruch would have known about it. If scores of women were having miscarriages after Yom Kippur. People are aware of this, and so he says, I'll tell me. He says, I don't know if the facts are correct. And then he says that even if the facts are correct, let me just add to that notion of when the facts are correct, is that there are studies available. The studies were done in Shaarei Tzedek in the 1980s, and the studies showed an increased occurrence or onset of labor for women in their 8th month. So the studies did not report by any means an increased number of babies who didn't make it. That wasn't discussed at all, but I don't think it's there at all. An increased number of women going to labor in the 8th month. Now the truth is, the 8th month is a time when one does not want one's wife to go into labor. 8th month is when the lungs are beginning to be shaped, formed. And during the 8th month is, we would categorize it as a sakana for the baby. Baruch Hashem, I think all babies make it through. Everything's otherwise healthy. But that is a concern, right? Rabbi Bleich subsequently raise serious questions about these studies in his volume 4 of Contemporary, and he does discuss that he says again, at the end of the day, it's only about, he says that one of the studies, if it's read correctly, shows that women who've come to full term, they are more likely to go into labor. A full term is 9th month. A baby that gets born full term is not pesukan at all. So that's what's supposed to happen. So Rabbi Blech also raises the question as to whether the studies were reported correctly, whether Rav Fisher, he wasn't working on those studies, I don't think. He was working with his own experiences. So that's one question. Question number two, Rav Aldering raises, he says, if Rav Fisher's talking about, even if his numbers are correct, but question number one is, are the numbers correct? There was a more recent study than also. The more recent study shows women going into labor, but not losing the babies. All right? Then the next or that I would make is that the women who are going in, these women who are going into labor on Tisha B'av, on Yom Kippur, maybe if they would ask the Shaila, the Rav would have said, don't fast. In other words, this was, you're taking a pool of people, many of them, the Rav would have said, given your conditions, you should not fast. It was an undifferentiated group. Now we are more sophisticated, so to speak, and all the women ask, and all the Rabbanim discuss with doctors, and we figure out, Miva Miya Holchim, right? But Rav Fisher was talking about a group that wasn't asking shailas. Said Achanami, maybe those women, if we would have done a differentiated group, they would have been told not to fast. And then Rav Aldenberg says, even if his numbers are correct, that's over the Rav Fisher's career. He was a man who lived into his late 80s, maybe even longer. So, that's not so impressive. Scores of women over 40 years of psak. And he says, even if his numbers are correct, it's a miyuta de miyuta, and one has to evaluate, when do we say that this is sakana sefashas? So even though we say suffix sakana, but there is some point at which a sakana is minimal enough that it's not called the suffix sakana. Poskim usually quote the Marshal that says that a suffix is 1 in 1,000. That's called that rises the bar of being a suffix. That if 1 in 1,000 sakonas defashes, so that is what's usually quoted. La niyas daite, I don't know. This has to be malach shulchan malachim. In the time of the Marshal, 1 in 1,000 was a very, very small number. In 2016, 1 in 1,000 is not such a small number. Now, if you tell a person that the mortality rate of this procedure is 1 in 1,000, you think twice. Right? What, like, it could be in the Marshal's time, 1 in 1,000. That means that I take every single kill I ever heard of. And maybe it meant 1,000. Nowadays, 1 in 1,000 means, if I think about 4 or 5 shuls in my neighborhood, that's already a significant number. So our numbers are bigger. So it could be that we would not use that rule nowadays. But the question is still a good question. At what point do we say that the numbers are that small that it doesn't even rise to the sakonas nefashos? And in a similar fashion, Rav Waldenberg raises the question of Nishtanu Atvam. He says, of course things can change. Nechlushu Adaris. Could be that this was true for that pregnancy has changed. But he says, but Nechlushu Adaris, you bring Rabbanim together, you make it this, you sit down together, you don't write a Haskoma. He didn't say this, Nusach, because he's a godly. He writes in a gentlemanly way. But he was saying is, you don't write in Haskoma to Sefer Aninos that Nechlus Vandorai said there's been this massive change of in the nature of prayer. You bring Rabbanim together, you sit down, the Gedolei Yisrael, you bring doctors together, and bring scientists together, and you discuss it, right? And then you write a tshuva about it. So that was, he's saying, this is not the to say Nechlus Vandorai, and because of that, he thought that was just not the way that. Number one, the facts may not be correct, and number two, that it's not due process when it comes to halacha, and that's not the way we would paskin this kind of a shaila. So he writes lachein ledati bor hadover, and then he writes that bor hadover lefi halacha ki ein laseis b'zeh hetiv oifin kloli. That it's clear to me, Rav Aldenberg writes, one cannot give this general kula for all women who are pregnant. that they have to eat on Yom Kippur. Ve'alachas kama she'en lehatzrech oson b'mafkia kein lechol. And we certainly should not be making them eat. Ela yesh l'seis ha'yirolen ki v'chol mikre shel chusha oistia me'amatzava normali. That whenever this is not a normal pregnancy, a healthy, regular pregnancy, alein la'asoy she'elis chacham she'yirolen nesaderech she'yelchu ben lefi ha'matzav she'is barer. The fund of Mikra Pratisha Lashuelas, each one take every single situation on its own. Alright? They have the Tshuvas and Hogas. Tshuvas and Hogas is, they have that in front of you as well. That's Rav Moshe Sternbach. He's the Rav of the Eda Charedes. If you're sure you're familiar with his Tshuvas, he writes very, very well. Most of Tshuvas. The Tshuvas and Hogas are written by his son Akiva, also in a big Talmud Chacham. But the style is just a very easy style. So he writes as well that if there's a chulshon, there's some kind of weakness, some kind of situation that could cause difficulties. He points out an amazing ha'ara. He quotes the Maharil that the Maharil was aware that sometimes a woman could actually lose a pregnancy as a result of a fast. And the Maharil thought that that was not enough evidence to impact on the halacha. That's an amazing horror that he found that Maharil. Good. The question, good.
What was the point you made about it can only have been being in his career for 40 years or something like that?
No, so the numbers, even if he has scores, let's say 40 women. So 40 women over 40 years is not... from all Yerushalayim, then that may not be an impressive enough number. Not that it was.
It's all one criticism, basically, that he doesn't have enough data to suggest that there's an increase to the point that it's.
Sekundas of Hashas.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all under the same right. The different, parts of that. Yeah. Good. However, what Rav Albert does point out is that there are many situations where a Rav does have to. Has to insist that a woman breaks her fast, and that is a very time-consuming part of a Rav's job before any fast day. Yom Kippur, Tisha B'Av, that's one of the wonderful things about a Shana, about a year when Tisha B'Av is on the Nidcha, because then it's much easier to be Mekel. But on a regular year, both the days before Yom Tisha B'Av and the days before Yom Kippur, again, a very consuming practice of speaking not to the women, speaking to the doctors. And there are a lot of different parts to the process. Usually it's better to speak with a doctor because one can get just more accurate information. And very often one can get the doctor to address the issue from a more scientific basis, and that is always very, very helpful. So what are the situations where we would certainly instruct a woman to break her fast? The concern of a fasting woman is that she's going to become dehydrated. And there is a concern that dehydration can bring about labor. Exactly what the process is, many doctors say we are not clear on how it lines up. And other doctors say we do understand that what happens is that when the uterus becomes poorly hydrated, so then it becomes uncomfortable with the pregnancy inside and begins to expel the pregnancy. So so dehydration is a huge issue that we're always concerned about. So Lamoshal, one of the first questions when a woman calls up that she's pregnant and she is coming to Yom Kippur. So one of the questions we'll ask, first of all, is we'll come back, let's discuss the ninth month. So the ninth month, Rav Nabin Sal, and I think Rav Aldenberg, they say the exact opposite of Rav Fisher. Rav Fisher said the ninth month, all right, you're clear, you're going to labor, you're going to be fine. On the other hand, we could argue the exact opposite, that if a woman goes into labor, so when she is in labor, she's also b'sakana. To me, labor is sakonas fashion. Machal Shabbos for a woman who's in labor. So the being in labor itself is a status of sakonas fashion. So I would always tell a woman that if she's in labor, if she sees that labor is starting, then she should break her fast. She should not go into labor in a compromised fashion. So if nothing's happening, it could be the ninth month, end of the ninth month. We don't know when she's going to go into labor. But if she already has the early signs, the early cramping, she already has some of the simanim that labor is starting, so then I would say that's when she has to break her fast, bishofi, because she's going to be a sekonos tefashos. She can't go into a sekonos tefashos in a dehydrated fashion. On the other hand, the Rav Aldamir writes, I would neither take the chumra of Rav Fisher that till the ninth month have to break the fast, and I would take the kula of Rav Fisher that the ninth month they can't eat. I said, for care, that we might reverse things. All right, now, one of the first things we ask is exactly where the pregnancy is holding. I do that because the eighth month is when I'm obviously most nervous because of the Shavuotic studies, even though it is probably not grounds for per se on its own to paskin. The numbers probably don't justify it, and further studies that were done on Ramadan women did not indicate a reason to be concerned. There was another study that came out just a year or two ago, which I don't know how it's being evaluated. However, it is when I get the most nervous because of the Shavuot Tzedek study. And that's also the most nerve-wracking because that's the one time when a medical practitioner does have a study to back him up and to express concern. So that's one orientation. But then we would want to know whether the pregnancy has been a healthy, normal pregnancy, as Rav Aldenberg raises. We would ask, number one, does she have a history of miscarriages? So that you already have in the Rishonim. Rav Chaim writes that if a woman has had two miscarriages, so then she should not fast. Unless we know what brought about the two miscarriages. Right? So she had a miscarriage came, Rachmana Litzlan, as a result of a fall or something, a result of some kind of illness, so that would not come into the calculus. But if she had two miscarriages as a reason for reasons that are not very well identified and very well distinct from dehydration and fasting, so then at that point we would not have her fast. Whenever we tell a woman not to fast, from my experience has been that doctors are very comfortable with doing shiurim. Now shiurim is both a good thing and not such a good thing. It's a good thing because Shulchan Aruch says, the Mishnah says, akal akal. You'd be mechal when you have to. Anytime you have to mechal a Shabbos or a Tainus, always go as easy as possible. So we know that Pachas Mikshir doesn't carry onshin with it. So if it's not onshin, that means it's a mokuladik way of eating on Yom Kippur. So that's a good thing about going to the room. And from a non halakhic perspective, it does give the woman a peace of mind that she thinks she's fasting. Right? It's very laborious. It is not an easy thing to do shiurim, because in order to get the amount of hydration a person needs, they have to do shiurim often for hours. Right? Shiurim means, according to Chassam Sofer, a shiurim means just under an ounce every 9 minutes. Halach is you can be mitzarev. You can have a liquid and a solid in the same 9 minutes. Doctor may not require a solid, but the two are not mistare for the shear, and therefore you can have the woman do both. Often the doctor only wants a liquid, so and often he'll say, once you're doing it, use a Gatorade, use an electrolyte liquid. There are other shiurim. There's the chasm service 9 minutes, so that is our course of first practice. The Alter Rebbe has 7 minutes. Rachel Shulchan has 6 minutes, and Yisrael Chanan, the Eponym Institution, has 5 minutes. So so halacha lamasa, if 9 minutes works, she'll use 9 minutes. if Naim's doesn't work, so you'd move down to one of the other shurim. But it is a very, very difficult thing for a woman to do, to be, to take, to look at the clock, and every 9 minutes take an ounce. And the doctors will tell you, I believe it's, I have to ask 2 or 3 liters that a person needs to ingest in order to have the hydration of a day. Now, whenever one has this kind of a shayla, bichlal, whether you're going to be mekel or machmer, if it's a situation where the Rav says, she has to fast, kivi yomakad moinim, she has to fast, so then the Rav will always tell her to stay in bed, to be as restful as possible. If it means that your husband has to come home from shul, take care of the kids, that's what it means, because fasting Yom Kippur trumps anything else we do Yom Kippur. Fasting Yom Kippur trumps being in shul for Ne'ilah, for Kol Nidre. Fasting is the Dinei Raisa. If it means that the husband has to be, all right, it trumps husband's davening as well. And that, even though it's very often a hard sell, it's the Chassam Sofer also had a hard time selling it. Chassam Sofer had, send me to the Chassam Sofer, if I have it in front of you. Yeah. He did, he quotes the Dvar Shmuel. He did, Bepshitas Lisha Beria Meinekes Ach V'Noy Mesukim L'chol Lov. Is that the case? Yeah. That there was a question that it was dangerous to go to, there was a concern of some contagious machla. So the doctor said that if you go outside, you can't fast. So the last paragraph is Omnam Lefiloshan Hasheila Sheirov Mishiru Motz Mitzeis Pesach Beisay Betaynes Mashmak Kishem Segurin Bebeisom Ein Atayness Maziklem. The doctor, if you go outside, you can't fast. If you're going to expose yourself to some machli, you can't fast. But if you stay at home, so that's something one has to instruct women, that often that people say, I'll be in shul. You have to explain that if it's going to threaten the tainus altogether. But Shlomo Zalman says, if being at home in bed will mean that you can take one less ounce of drink, you're taking shurim, so you're drinking the small shot glass less than an ounce, you drink every 9 minutes. If staying at home means that there's one little drink, one sip that you wouldn't take, better to stay at home the whole day. So that's something that Rav has to explain, that that is, it's sometimes an isoyan. But and sometimes if the doctor knows that the woman is going to be laid up at home and stay at home and there'll be air conditioned, so the doctor will look at it differently. He thinks Tisha B'Av Yom Kippur is going to be on her feet all day, she's going to be in shul all day. So that's an important thing to be able to tell people. That's, and even if one is being makil, so it could be the same thing as what Shlomo Zalman writes, that this will, unless for some reason a person is so ill they have to mamashev eat properly, so then they go to shul. Sometimes you have to negotiate with the woman. It's like, she can't handle the idea of not being shul all the time. So then you figure it out, how close to shul she's going to be. Kol Nidre night, she's very, very well hydrated, all right? Or Ne'ila, it's very close to be able to break the fast. She'll take paspasale, take some drinks with her in her pocket so that if she needs it. So then you have to sometimes negotiate, and always warn women that they have to, anybody, if all fasters are supposed to be drinking already 2 or 3 days in advance of the day, because doctors have indicated that we do hold water in our tissue for periods of time, and that will make the tinnitus much easier and make any concern much less. So the first thing is, has there been a previous hapola, two hapolas? If there's been one hapola previously, that's a very serious discussion with the doctor. Whether one hapola is a strong enough indication of a subsequent hapola. The scientists say that God forbid, if a woman suffered one miscarriage, so then depending on the situation, that is an increase that could raise the chance of another apollo by 15%. Two apollos, 32%. So again, two apollos, that we already have clear from the Rishonim. If it's one apollo, it means discussing the doctor and bringing it, discussing with Poskim, because maybe, as Rav Waldenberg said, once it's something a little bit different, an increased chance, so then we have to be concerned. If the woman had any kind of labor pains already, so that's already an indication that she shouldn't fast. She already had labor pains, that means here also we call it preterm labor. So that's what we're afraid of. So she's already in a situation where she is has a predisposition for preterm labor, that she shouldn't fast in Yom Kippur. Now that could be a predisposition because in this pregnancy she's already had preterm labor. It could be, and this is because of the doctor, it could be that a previous pregnancy was preterm. It's a conversation with the doctor. It all depends on the situation. Sometimes a woman has had, Baruch Hashem, six pregnancies. So the first pregnancy was preterm, but the last five have been full term. So you have to discuss with the doctor whether that one pregnancy is an indication that maybe the seventh will also be preterm. Right? So I would think, Lanis Daiti, that would not be an indication, but that's a medical question. So any predisposition to preterm, then there's a nuanced issue which has to be discussed with doctors, and that is that towards the end of a pregnancy, women have painless, they tell us they're painless, painless cramping called Braxton Hicks. So those contractions are usually not an indication of going to labor, right? Why is it a nuanced question? Because there are sometimes Braxton Hicks can be more intense, and if they're very, very intense, so some doctors may say this already is a predisposition to preterm. So that's and then Hashara, every Rav has to have his gurus that he goes to, and that he knows that these are mumchen who've seen a lot, and they are people who have calm dispositions and not very, very anxious people. And the Rav has to protect his guru. And you know, he can't tell who he spoke with because he can't expose his. It's not fair to the doctor. The doctor hasn't seen the patient, right? The doctor is not the patient's doctor. But and ultimately, it's the patient's doctor that has usually the best information. But in order to get oriented and to how to evaluate things and understand things, and sometimes you'll get Shilas Mamish Erev Yom Kippur and you can't speak to the patient's doctor. So you have to have the people that will help you out and will discuss things with you and have a good orientation. They understand the Chomer Hadin of fasting Yom Kippur. And this kind of a question about an intense Braxton Hicks, that's something that you have to raise. The concern is dehydration. So let's say a woman has a predisposition to dehydration. She's already fainted several times. Whatever, once, twice, I don't know what the... Even once. And so you have to figure it out. If she fainted because she was in a room with 100 people and she hadn't eaten or drunk and it was stifling, that's not called a predisposition to fainting, right? But if a woman was on the subway and she fainted, and that's how she found that she was pregnant, that's not uncommon. Or if a person was... faints in different situations, or a person is in a regular day going about their business, and if they don't drink they faint. So those are all predispositions to dehydration. Fainting in of itself is a sakonis afashis. God forbid a person can fall terribly, so that and it would be a would raise the concern that she could go into preterm labor, because dehydration is one of the pathways of how we understand dehydration. In fact, Rav Tendler points out that when the Shulchan Aruch discusses ochos ubulmus, he thinks that's dehydration. What are the signs of dehydration? So they are fainting, all right? But then the other signs are that a person becomes lightheaded. That's a sign of dehydration. The headaches that we get on a fast day. So there are withdrawal headaches. Caffeine withdrawal is one kind of headache, and then there are dehydration headaches. Right, so that's what that is. What happens? So we make it through. We get through, but that is a simen, and a very intense headache if the urine becomes very intensely amber. These are all simanim of dehydration, which have to be taken very seriously by anybody. All right, but the person, usually the person knows himself. They know they get a headache every single Shavuos v'Tammuz, and they're fine afterward. All right, so then they will probably not ask a shayla. Shouldn't ask a shayla. A person may be get lightheaded until he lies down for a few minutes, and he's fine. But if a person gets lightheaded and he lies down and doesn't go away, that's a concern for Yom Kippur. Certainly a pregnant woman, if she gets lightheaded, she lies down, and after 20 minutes doesn't go away, so I'd be very concerned that she should break her fast in that case. So any signs of dehydration, any labor, right? Any signs of dehydration, and these are, each one is on two scores. One is previous history, is she predisposed? And that is boy b'yoyim. If boy b'yoyim, she has any kind of contraction, she has to break the fast b'shofi. That's not too sure. If she has early signs of dehydration, so then, not this is more of a medical question, my practice is to tell her to, if she has, if it's lightheadedness, see if it goes away. But if it's persistent, or other signs of dehydration, she becomes, say, God forbid, say, if she has a few signs of dehydration, headache and lightheadedness or whatever, so then she should break with shiurim. And that's when I would tell her to start with a chasm sarif v'shir. And if after half an hour it doesn't go, then go to Alter Rebbe v'shir. If it doesn't work, then go to Yuchanan v'shir. So then, the course, and if that doesn't work, so the course of an hour and a half, if she doesn't work, she'll be drinking normally. On the other hand, if she has any kind of contractions, so then she has to drink b'shofi without shiurim. If any kind of staining is rachmana litzlan. Usually staining is not a problem b'chlal, but I shouldn't say that. I'll say it again. Staining, it could be an early sign of a miscarriage. All right, so that has to be taken very seriously. If any staining on Yom Kippur, just to break her fast. What happens if she has had staining earlier? So that you have to discuss with the doctor. It's a very common approach. It's important in terms of chasnida. That a very common event, which we find happening more and more, is that women have some kind of a blood clot that forms under the placenta in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. It's a very common thing. More of them are aware of it, and that raises nida shilas. As far as my understanding is, what I've learned from doctors is that is not, that kind of staining is not a worry sign, neither in terms of miscarriage, not in terms of fasting as well. All right. So if a woman has staining on Yom Kippur, we're not going to figure out where it's from. She has to break her fast, b'shofi, without shir. If a woman has had staining before Yom Kippur, so if it's diagnosed and the doctor says, "I know where it's coming from and I know what it is. We did an ultrasound and it does not impact the health of the pregnancy or anything," so then we know what to do. Then she fasts. On the other hand, the doctor says, "I'm really not sure. I don't know where it's from." Or if he says, "I know where it's from and it concerns me, and it could be an early sign of a troubled pregnancy," so then of course we would not add on any more stress to that pregnancy, and she would drink in that case whatever the doctor says. If he says that shurim are enough, good. If he says shurim not enough, then to drink properly, fully. Then there's a simen which is very hard to get to be aware of, and that is if the fetal movements have changed. Fetal movements begin usually in the fifth month. That's very hard for a woman to know whether there has been a significant drop in fetal movement. And you run the risk of driving the woman a little bit anxious, because usually what happens is the woman, over the course of the day, she retrospectively takes note of it. And if over the course of X number of hours there hasn't been a fetal movement, she'll call the doctor and be concerned. But it's a retrospective. It's not that she's on her mind, it's that before she goes to sleep, she says, "All right, today, before dinner," right, she realizes it's been okay, she's had a fetal movement. If she didn't have, the light goes on. If you're going to tell a woman to monitor fetal movements, you're going to drive her anxious, but you have to do it. You don't have a choice. So you have to say to her, if in her mind the fetal movements have slowed down, haven't been then she should break her fast. Again, b'shofi. Again, it could be that she'll end up breaking fast unnecessarily. All right, but that you can't. You have to err on the side of the pregnancy in that case, and leave it up to the woman's judgment, and encourage her that if she thinks that the fetal movements have changed, and she's not feeling the movement as often as she did otherwise, then she'd break her fast. So, no question about that. Okay, there is a. The overarching direction of here is to have the conversation with the doctor. Usually the better doctors are willing to speak to Rabbanim. In other words, that's usually a siman where the doctor is as good as craft. If he's a Bulgaiva, it doesn't have time for Rabbanim. Tzarechian, if this is a good doctor. If he's but usually a good doctor gets his self-esteem from being a good doctor, from delivering healthy babies and taking care of women. So he doesn't have to get his self-esteem pumped up by not talking to Rabbanim. So usually the good doctors will speak to Rabbanim and spend time, but you can't waste his time. So you have to be up on what you need to know, and you have to be up on what questions to ask, and basically want to know whether this pregnancy is at a greater risk than any other than your regular pregnancy, and whether fasting would put this pregnancy at a greater risk than fasting for any other pregnancy. That's what you're getting at, right? In other words, if you have to do the sugya and come to your own conclusions. If you come to conclusions as Rabbi Yaakov, if you come to the conclusion of Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Fisher, you'll be very busy Erev Yom Kippur. Because everybody can ask you questions. But if you come to the conclusion of Aldenberg, so then you're going to have to be more discerning, right? And you're going to have to discern whether this pregnancy is like every other pregnancy. And if it's like every other pregnancy, then you'll tell the woman she has to lie down and she can't go to shul and she has to. And then you'll give her all the simonim. If this happens, shurim. If this happens, just break your fast, all right? But that's what you have to figure out, whether, number one, does she have a predisposition to going into early labor? Does she have a predisposition for a miscarriage? All right? And then number three, is this pregnancy any reasonably that it is a more precarious pregnancy than your average normal pregnancy? There are questions which, newer questions come up. For example, I think Shlomo Zalman recognized that pregnancies that come as a result of fertility treatments, IVF pregnancies. So I think Shlomo Zalman notes that in the early months, a IVF pregnancy may be more precarious than a regular pregnancy. So that I would also say is should be discussed with the doctors. The ninth month, there again, I would say the ninth month in of itself is not different. Going into labor is different. However, what is important, a newer question which is coming up, is that one of the strategies of doctors is that there are situations where they want to have control over the labor, right? In other words, that can be for one of two reasons. In other words, they want to have it more orchestrated. They obviously they'll let the woman go into labor if they have no control. But there are situations where they say, for example, let's say the situation where the baby is not measuring well, where the sonogram shows the baby is not a healthy baby for some reason, right? Or they're concerned. So they want to have everything organized so that when this baby is born, right away, there's a nursery, incubator, whatever, everything that needs. They don't want a situation where the woman goes into labor and the nursery's not ready. They don't want a situation where the woman goes to labor and she has to travel and maybe she'll end up at a different hospital or something. So those could be situations that you have to, I don't, this, I wouldn't paskin either way, but they require a lot of yishuv hadas to think it through, discuss it with other rabbanim, with the rebbeim. Is that a reason why we would be overly concerned? The doctor says if this woman goes into an unmonitored labor, I'm concerned about the health of the baby, right? That's something that has to be taken into consideration. If the doctor says I'm concerned if the baby goes into an unmonitored situation because I'm part of a golf tournament and I don't want to miss him, obviously we know what the answer is. The what else can happen? Any questions? So after the mother gives birth, so during the first 3 days, a woman is a cholish yesh basakana, and it is mutter for her to break her fast, and according to many, she's mukhayevus to break her fast. What happens is these 3 days, according to most poskim, are halachic days. So that if she gives birth on a Monday, 2 minutes before tzeis, before shkia, that's going to count as her first day. So when Yom Kippur rolls around on Wednesday, it'll be less than 72 hours. That's the machlokes of poskim, whether the 3 days are measured by the halachic days or by 72 hours. Mishnah Berurah is makel that you have 72 hours. Therefore, it's even conceivable, even though the Shulchan Aruch says no. Shulchan Aruch says that it goes with halachic days. Mishnah Berurah says 72 hours, and even though the Mishnah Berurah's cheshbon can work out that a woman can eat at the beginning of Yom Kippur and has to start her fast several hours later. But that's the way that the Mishnah Berurah paskins. The Mishnah Berurah is, I think the Mishnah Berurah himself, if I remember correctly, is machmer in that particular situation. In other words, that if the 72 hours will end towards the beginning of Yom Kippur, so then he says, then you should not take advantage of that kula. Right. It sounds like if they're going to end 2 hours before Ne'ilah, it sounds like that he would be okay with. But if they're going to end 2 hours during Kol Nidre, so then Shlomo Zalman Orbach questions that Chumrah in the Shmir Shabbos, and of course it's going to be a Hayiro the Mahachor has to come to. Go ahead.
Rabbi mentioned not speaking shears and outs.
Both Mishir is probably just under an ounce. It's a safe bottle of Mishir, let's put it that way. Right? To use a small shot glass is a safe bottle of Mishir. From between 7 days, that's up to the chola. It depends how she feels. So that will... and then after 7 days, then she's like a regular person with a regular cheshbonos. Okay? Then the question comes up about a nursing mother. So the nursing mother is much less of a, it's not as scary an issue as a pregnant woman. Because the nursing mother, at the end of the day, will be able to provide for the baby. But there are two concerns. One concern is that the baby may not get enough milk. And the other concern is that the mother is predisposed to dehydration. So, because she's putting out so much liquid, so the both are cases where we monitor both the mother and the baby. Starting the fast, she'll drink a lot and she'll provide and she'll nurse the baby. And if over the course of the tainus one sees that the baby is not happy, not getting enough, so then nowadays we will supplement with formula. So that in of itself should not be a reason for the mother to break the fast, the fact that the child may have to take formula. Right? Now, if the child refuses the formula, right, so then at some point the mother's going to have to break the fast in order the child is hydrated and gets what the child needs. So that is a situation which gets negotiated between the baby and the mother over the course of the day. The mother has to have a sense of what the baby needs. It will depend on the age of the baby, and of course the mother is going to make sure that the baby is healthy and well and well provided for, and we'll have to use a judgment call as exactly when to, if the baby is not taking the bottle and at what point the baby's not getting enough. And it's a negotiation. Maybe the baby's not taking the bottle because it's not that hungry. In another hour they will take the bottle. So it becomes a hashara that the mother has to make exactly when she breaks her fast so that the baby is able to drink. There is a statement that is attributed to Chazon Ish that if a baby has never had formula, then shinui mi'ayim is a sakana for the baby. And therefore, if a baby's never had formula, the mother is allowed to break her fast in order for the baby to be able to eat. This is it's very, very hard to be semich in this Chazon Ish. Number one is we're not exactly sure what the Chazon Ish said. And there are different interpretations of the Chazon Ish. I'm not sure exactly where it's coming from. There is a Gemara that says in Yevamos, Stam Tinok Mesukon Eitzel Cholam, that a baby doesn't get milk, the Stam baby is Mesukon. Shinui Mi'ayim could be a problem. And therefore the Gemara says that one can give the baby even Cholam Tomei. Alright? So the question is that a good source for this kind of conclusion? The number one, we have formula and most babies do very well in it. So do we say that there the baby wasn't getting anything? That's why he chose Mesukin. Mesukin because of Shinui Ayim, that's hard to say. And the Rishit Pesach points out that Rishonim say, Rashi seems to say, it's called the baby. It's the baby was an ill baby. It doesn't mean a stam baby. A stam ill baby, maybe was sick, is mesukin if it doesn't get hydrated well enough. But if the baby's well, so that's where Rav Pesach also thought that the one should not follow this Chazon Ish, and that also became clear. Obviously, in retrospectively, the Chofetz Chaim also discusses that only if a baby is a mesukin and we can't get him to eat anything, that we would allow the mother to eat for that reason. Nevertheless, if the baby is sakeh shvach, is not well, doesn't digest well, that in those cases we may be more lenient in asking the mother to break her fast for the sake of the baby. Then we have to evaluate the mother. The mother is able to have dehydration because she's putting out so much milk. So that will be evaluated in the same way as we evaluate any concern for dehydration, with the way that we expressed it earlier. Okay, any questions about this sugya? Good? Okay. Bez Hashem, should go through the sugyas. Mitzvah, you'll have communities with lots of babies being born and lots of pregnancies. You'll have to spend a lot of time trying to be more everyone these days.